Welcome to Hot Breath Comedy Fam. On Monday, May 13th, I am teaching a clean comedy workshop. The last four I have taught sold out very quickly. So if you want to learn about clean comedy, the business side, where the line is, how to write clean comedy, go to the link in the description of this episode and we'll see you there. What's goody, Hot Breathiverse? We are back with Hot Breath Live. There wasn't an episode posted this past Monday because my co-host Yoshi was in Spain, where he is actually going to tell us about the dope comedy scene there. And this is also a good time to bring up, we are hiring a producer. If someone listening to this loves the show and wants to help us start to upload podcasts, then that would be greatly appreciated. Just reach out to us on social media at Hot Breath Pod and we can discuss the details. But with that being said, welcome back to Hot Breath Live with Joel Byers and Yoshi. So, fresh off your trip to Spain, Yoshi, please tell us what was going on there.
Yeah, I went there for a trip with my son for soccer. He plays soccer and he got invited to a camp.
Football.
Yeah, yeah. Football. We play soccer here. They play football there.
Football.
I saw basketball courts there, but they were converted to soccer fields. That's how much they play football there.
Makes sense.
Like, that gives you like just the level of like competition and sort of just how much they value soccer and how much they value football there. So went there for the week. And most of my day was pretty much like watching the football stuff. But at night, I'd go out and do shows and mics. I got hooked up with Hot Brethren. Gus Horn.
Oh, yeah.
Gus Horn is an OG.
OG.
And I've known him for a couple of years now. He lived in Atlanta for a little bit. I was like, yo, you ever did, because he's kind of internationally traveled comedian. Mm-hmm. I was like, yo, you ever did comedy in Barcelona? And he sent me like a spreadsheet and a whole bunch of contacts. And I was like, just went away and just started hitting people up. And when I got there, I had a show. I got there on Saturday. I had a show Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I was able to do four shows Thursday and then the next Sunday. Yeah, so I did four shows within a span of basically like 8 days.
Yeah. Dios mío.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They have a very active English comedy scene out there. Lots of different casts of characters. A lot of people have just been like, just finished school and they ended up in Barcelona, wanted to do comedy. I met some folks that, you know, were from different countries and then ended up in Barcelona, decided to do comedy. Tons of people watch a lot of American comedy, but there's like an actual scene. All the shows had people in it. And I would say probably just the biggest lesson for me was just how to take my material and make it internationally salvageable. Because I realize I make a lot of local and American references to stuff. So I learned the hard way that some stuff they just didn't get at all. There was like just no reference to some stuff. But when I talked about like my kids and like marriage material, they were like on board. They're like, oh, that's like universal. Everyone gets it. But when I was making references to like Reading Rainbow and like kid, like they just didn't get it. And so.
And what was the other one you said? Reading Rainbow and what?
Reading Rainbow. And I just talked about like growing up in the 90s.
Oh, and it was just culturally different. Yeah. Yeah.
Just culturally, they just don't know. Right. And right. So, but when I kept it to like kid stuff, family things, father, being an immigrant, all those things all resonated with them because a lot of them are immigrants. A lot of the people are immigrants. And, you know, the host did a lot of crowd work. A lot of hosts do crowd work there. And a lot of the crowd work is where you're from and, you know, how'd you end up in Barcelona kind of thing. And it's just from everywhere. Like, no crowd. None of the crowds were like, oh, we're all from Barcelona. Not even like the majority. Everyone's from different places. It's like a very student university kind of town, where a lot of students go there, but just it's a tourist attraction as well. It's got, you know, like Barcelona is the home of Picasso and Gaudi, who are phenomenal, like world-renowned artists. Got houses and museums and stuff like that. So people come there all the time just to like explore the amazing city. But it's also a sub kind of like a, I would say it's Europe's version of, the American version of Martha's Vineyard is kind of Barcelona.
Oh, que rica, wey.
During the summers to like relax, chill, and just like hang out kind of thing. So just a very fun city and just good comedy as well. And yeah, it was just a good, it was a good time. I'd probably say out of the, you know, cause I get critical of myself, out of the four shows, three went well, four did not. And I was like, oh, that's comedy. That's,
yeah, that's all.
I needed that. I was like, yeah, of course I'm not going to bat 100 in another country with material that I'm just figuring out whether I should do or should not do.
Yeah, reading country. Rainbow. What were the other comics doing? Was there like a specific, did you pick up on themes or anything different from American comedy or similar?
I'd probably say they did a lot of like just cultural difference jokes, like the way that Spanish people act versus like, or the way that certain like Spanish Latinos act versus Mexican Latinos, or versus or the way that French people act, or Irish people, or Scottish. They did a lot of references
we may not get here.
Tons of references that we may not get
here. Yeah.
And then they're also very like politically savvy. They're very into politics and also very into like American politics. There was a lot of jokes about our American politics.
That tracks. Yeah.
Every probably three out of the four shows, there was a joke about mass shootings in America.
Like, no.
That was just a thing. Yeah, that was just a thing.
That hurts my heart. I thought it was going to be like Trump, but you're like, no, it's even worse.
I mean, definitely there were jokes about our president being old. But
yeah, like, that too, yeah.
But that was like
a thing. Like, that I was hurts.
Like, yeah, dude, it was
that
like,
that hurts, bro. Oh, that hits home.
Oh, I, on that, on one of the last shows that I did, the host brought me up and he said something about like Americans are always apologizing for how sorry they are. It was such a funny joke. It was so funny. It was so good. About how sorry they are for what's happening in America or whatever.
Yep.
And I'm bullet spot. So I go up right after. I'm like, oh my God, his name's Hector. I was like, Hector, I am so sorry that we're the greatest country ever.
Hilarious.
And I get a huge applause and then a boo. I was like, that tracks for you guys. That tracks.
Oh, that's great. Oh yeah, I've been guilty of that. If I'm like overseas, I've been guilty of that. Where are you from? Oh, the States. And you kind of hang your head. Sorry. It's not us. It's not me, I swear.
Yeah. But it was just a good, like, it was good to know. And just, and for the majority of the shows I stayed for, the three out of the four shows I stayed the whole time.
And your kid was just at home watching pay-per-view?
What'd you say?
Was your kid with you, or was he at home watching the pay-per-view movies?
No. This camp had him the entire time.
Oh, so you were just dolo.
Yeah, I was.
Oh, just, that's awesome.
I was
just
chaperone. Yeah. During the day, I would go watch his games, and sometimes the night he would also have games. So after the games were done.
Oh, you were free.
Yeah. So they'd be done usually like 8, 9 o'clock. And all the shows were like at 8, 9, and sometimes at 10. So I would literally like on the way there, grab a bite and then just go to the show. So it was very like convenient from a open mic, like comedian perspective. I was I'm done with being a dad. We'll be a comic.
But then you're on the phone with your wife like, man, they've got us going late over here, honey. No time for anything but this camp. Sorry. Yep. It's not fun. I'm glad you didn't come. It's not fun. You wouldn't want to be here. All those things. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, she's like, how is it? It's okay.
It's fine. It's fine. Over here in the Martha's Vineyard of España.
Yeah. Gorgeous place. Gorgeous place. But yeah, it was really great. No complaints, man. I had a ball. Just a good time overall. Great scene. Super supportive as well. Mm-hmm.
I
think it's funny because I remember I went to Slovenia like 2 years ago and I did like 2 shows out there. I was there for like a week and did 2 shows. And Europeans are just much more okay talking about very hard-hitting topics. Huh. Like they're okay like talking about, but as soon as you make fun of like this is the thing that they did not like, and I don't know whether it's just the Spanish, but as soon as you make fun about like colonialism to them, they're like, no.
I would do great over there.
Don't talk.
Wow. School shootings, yes. Childhood massacre, yes. Cultural massacre, no way, Jose. Tranquilo, gringo, tranquilo. What were the shows like? Because like in America, you know, our shows, a lot of them are like coffee shop patios or like how were they set up?
Like mostly in basements of like just restaurants that the mm-hmm. restaurant is set up to have like a separate place to perform. And so just, basements. And like one of the shows that I did both Sunday nights, I did the same show each Sunday. And that show, like in a basement of a bar, no one was upstairs, but everyone was downstairs. Like they came for just the comedy. Maybe between 50 to 80 people packed in a basement environment.
Wow.
Both times packed. No time they had to get chairs from upstairs and bring them down. The other show, same way, small space. The other one was probably maybe 20 people in the space, but packed. It felt like a big crowd was in there. But overall, just like, I would say there's a lot of independent shows because there's not a lot of clubs, but the club that is there are very like, let the producers do their own thing. Lots of themed shows there. So just good overall, like it felt like a comedy community.
Wow, how cool. Yeah, so I mean, that's similar in America of just kind of in a restaurant, maybe in a side room, but great turnouts, wow.
Great turnouts. I mean, and everyone does their own marketing, like they get people out, like great thing that I would say that I saw a lot of people. Two of the shows was produced by this one guy who didn't necessarily like, it was a free show and then he takes tips afterwards, but he has like a credit card machine and he literally went to every single table. Would you like to tip? Would you like to tip? Would you like to tip? And everybody tipped. And I was like, oh wow, that's very forward, but that's a very European thing to do. Just be like, hey, we just gave you a free show. And he's like, the suggested tip is between like what you'd pay for a movie, between $7 and $12. That's what we suggest, but you can tip whatever. And then he was like, and if you don't have any cash, I've got a credit card reader. And everyone just like credit card reads and he collects the tips and then pays the comics. So yeah, it was very cool.
Like what you pay for a movie is a great, almost like anchor of the of the ask. Instead of like, you know, pay what you want, you know, it's only our dreams. You kind of make a passive joke about it. But actually anchoring it to like, you got to experience a form of entertainment you would typically pay this amount of money for.
Yeah.
So that's a good way. Cause you know, the show we do at the brewery is free and it's tip based. So that's a good way to maybe entice people to do more than just like the $5 that sometimes people will do.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I think just giving them an example of what they paid for, right? I think too is a good anchor.
And then guilting them, going up to each table and then guilting them with your sad comic puppy eyes.
Oh yeah. But here's the thing. If you don't do that, you don't get the tip. So he just, like, he just went around and for the first show, I did two shows with him. The first show, he just went around every single table. And then like the second show, he just stayed by the door before they left. It's just before, would you like to tip? Would you like to tip? Would you like to tip?
Wow.
Yeah. This one guy who we made him a part of the show, like became like the butt of the jokes, but great audience member. We were like, hey, would you like to tip? He's like, no. He's like, all right. And then we started clowning him for not tipping since he was literally like a part of the entire show.
Right.
So the guilt works both ways. You know what I mean?
Of course.
And then capitalism. He eventually did tip. I think we were like, we helped you like close because he was on a date. We were like, you're going to close because of us.
How many comics were typically on the shows? Like, how long were the shows? I'm just getting a vibe for, you know, how it is here and there.
Yeah, I'd probably say the average was like anywhere from like 7 to 10 minutes. I did one show where he let me close for like, I think I did 12 minutes. But the majority of the shows, I didn't see anything where people were doing like longer. So they're mostly showcase shows.
That's great stage time though.
Oh, great stage time. Yeah. And I think that's how the majority of a lot of those shows go. I didn't see a lot of like just headlining shows where, or like the three host feature headlining show format. Yeah. Also, like they were also talking about, I think Michelle Wolf lives there. And she randomly shows up at shows. I thought, I was like, oh, that'd be awesome if she showed up at a show that I was on. That'd be amazing. But yeah, she just shows up and just, you know, she does her set. Obviously, she's still traveling and still touring, but like she lives there and just starts does shows at the English Scene in Barcelona.
Whoa, that's so cool.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people that come through and it's like super friendly and people just are helpful to get you on, especially. I would say they have a lean towards, if you're an American comic, there's like a higher level of like, oh, you like do this.
Oh, really?
And I think it also like word got around because the first show I did well.
And there's a black guy on the scene. That's what it was, yeah.
I think like by the time like the other shows came around, people were like, oh, you should try to get him on your show. So I think that's right. I was like, oh, I'm going to only be here for a week. And, you know, a lot of times, even like during the evenings, I didn't know the time that I'd be done as well because the schedules were tight, but sometimes like the buses ran late or anything like that. So I wouldn't know when I got back. So just I did show up to one show and I wasn't able to get on. And I'm super bitter about that. No, I'm kidding.
Racist. It was fine. Yeah. Colonialism. That's what it is.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, this. No, but it was all good.
And I love that it was Hop Brother and Gus Horn, who helped connect the dots. I love hearing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Gus is open for Russell Peters.
Yeah.
And he's TJ Miller as well. But yeah, Gus is putting in that work, man. I'm a big fan of his work ethic.
Yeah. He reached out to come on the show and I told him we're trying to find a producer to help schedule booking and all that. So
yeah,
I just want to show up and record this. I'm tired of doing everything else. I'm like, you know, I've been doing it 8 years. It's, I'm good on all the behind the scenes stuff. So yeah. If y'all want the show to keep going, because you know, life is getting busy. You know, I'm getting booked more and more. I started doing this clean comedy workshop that sold out in like 2 hours, which was unbelievable. So I'm going to do another one this Sunday.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. I hadn't done, I did the in-person one here in Atlanta, but I haven't really taught in a while. I forgot. Forgot how good I am at it.
I was waiting for it. I was waiting for it. It's about to come.
That no, humble no, it was more. I forgot how much I enjoy it because you know how I feel. I've talked to you about teaching and not wanting to feel icky or feel some type of way because it can have a bad. To some people, teaching comedy can have a, but it's not the people that are qualified to do it. It's the people unqualified trying to rip people off is what gives it a bad rap. So
sure.
Especially playing comedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something I believe so much in, like it's very exciting for the comics in there to have that moment of like, oh, this is how you write clean comedy. I can do that. It's because it's really not people. I think people overcomplicate writing clean and they feel like, oh, that's not for me and stuff. But it's a skill set everyone should have. Just to at least, it changed my life when I was in Austin and that comic said he turned down a 10-minute church gig that paid $500 because he couldn't do 10 minutes clean. I was like, that happens all the time too. It's like,
I remember, did you interview Tushar like a while back?
A while back.
Yeah, when he did that wedding.
Yeah.
Have 30 minutes and he still did it and they wrote him a check, but they were happy to write him the check because it was not good. And he just remembered, he was like, I need some more material. But that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, we're always putting ourselves into spots where like we may not be able to do this, but we never know until like we get there. Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, I can imagine there's probably a lot of gigs. That's probably a good like podcast question. What gig did you do? Did you regret that you should not have done?
Oh, my first headlining gig on the road, I was supposed to do 45 minutes. And this was like young Joel, like
one-liner Joel?
Rubbing walls. This was rubbing walls Joel. I ran out of material probably at like 25. Especially because, you know, when it's going great, you have all the time in the world. And that's what young comics will be like, oh, I got 20. I was like, until that 20 doesn't work. And then you got about eight. Then you got
eight.
It shrinks all the way up. And then other jokes.
There's no laughs. Dude. Now you're just reading.
Yeah. And you're just shrinking on stage with every joke. You just get smaller and smaller. Every joke that misses. So it was probably like 25 in maybe, because it wasn't going that great. So everything just, I rubbed the walls. I rolled on the floor. I'm not even kidding, dude. Like, it was bad. And it probably paid $50 maybe if it paid. I was just like, I'm a headliner now, you know. And I remember the entrance was from behind the stage. So it made me feel like, oh, I'm doing a show. They don't see me. I'm just going to appear and change their lives. And I did for the worst. I did. I changed their lives for the worst. But yeah, we all. It's kind of part of it that it's right. You never know until you try and you just stretch yourself and you dust yourself off and get back up on the horse. Really.
Yep. Either you eat it or you conquer it, and it's one or the other.
And we've all done both. Yeah. What about you? Does one come to mind for you?
I wish I wouldn't have done. I mean,
and I'm glad I did that gig, but it was one of those of like, here we go. We're just gonna have to figure it out.
I think I did a birthday party. Like, this is probably maybe like a year or two ago. I did a birthday party, and I realized I'm just not. I've stopped. Like, I no longer take birthday parties because I'm just not skilled. Like, I don't feel like I'm not like a huge crowd work. I can do crowd work, but I can't do it for like 15, 20 minutes. And I think at a birthday party, they want you to like make fun of like the environment, the people, right, like all that. And right, I like prepared material. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm, and I went in there doing my prepared material. And yeah, that 30 minutes got down to 15. I started making fun of like the people and like the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked. But I didn't have 15 more minutes of it.
And then to bounce. Yeah. And then you try to transition back. It's just, there's nothing to pivot.
Yeah. I mean, like, I started off like making fun of the environment and the people, and a lot of them were old. So I had like a couple of old jokes in there, mm-hmm, like, but I didn't have 5 minutes of old jokes material. I had like maybe like a minute and a half of stuff. And then, you know, I even like did research like on the people.
Yeah. And
I had that material. And all that went well. It was just as soon as I went into like my prepared stuff.
Reading Rainbow.
Yeah.
Reading Rainbow.
Like, this LeVar Burton is going to kill him.
This is going to get him.
And it didn't. But yeah, that's probably like one that I remember like fondly. I was like, oh, I shouldn't have taken this gig. I'm just not that skilled. I don't think I'm like, because I've watched like, I think you might have posted that Ronnie Jordan birthday party that he
dude, one of the best things I've ever seen.
And it was like a master class.
I remember watching that
and like, I don't know whether I watched it before or after that show, but I was like, I don't do that. But I think that's exactly what they're expecting at a birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? He was playing with the audience, clowning people, clowning himself. Like, it was just a, like, but I think that just, that also comes out of just pure experience of having been at a lot of gigs like that, where it felt very natural. It didn't feel like it was at a show.
Yeah, I'm going to have to link that for people to watch because, no, it is. No, Ronnie Jordan is legit one of the funniest comics alive. Like, I've seen him work so many times and never bomb. Never lose the... Like, always murder in his way and just murder at a level. Yeah. No, he's been one of my favorites, like, since I started. He's definitely one that... he does a lot of dope stuff, but he's someone that like more comics should know about just to learn from, because he's a sensei with that stuff. Yeah, and I'll link it to people watching live, and then I'll also link that set in the show notes, because
this is how you do a birthday party. And it was in like a backyard.
Yeah, he's on a patio, and people are just there's a table I can show people watching live, but there's legitimately like a table on like, hold on, let me go here.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it felt like. That's what it felt like. You were just doing comedies in front of people that are playing dominoes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a patio table. People aren't even facing him, but they're laughing. Like, he's at a cookout in the middle of the day.
And murdering.
Murdering, dude. Murdering. So, yeah, that's definitely worth watching for peeps that...
Yeah, that's a masterclass.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think just knowing the stuff that you're good at versus not good at, not all comedians are for all environments.
And being, and developing it over time. It all takes time. You know, Ronnie's been doing it, I mean, over 20 years, I would assume.
For sure.
Came up. Because I saw
him in college.
Mud. Oh, you saw him at your college?
Yeah.
He's one of the he's like one of the most like in-demand college acts.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's doing just fine.
Yeah.
He's making bank. I did a lot of my early good paying gigs were with him. He would take me to colleges and put a little money in my pocket. And I was like, oh, comedy has money. And see him kill a college crowd and then go see him kill like a nightclub crowd that's like smoking hookah. Like he could just do everything.
Yeah.
Zahan asked if I'd do clean crowd work. Yeah. But I mean, even when I used to do a bunch of roasts and stuff, I mean, I would do like clean roasting. I wouldn't do, like just F this person, LOL. You know, I mean, I would write jokes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it would be clean crowd work. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. Did we give everybody like the after show of the Hot Breath Live that we did? I don't know if we did that.
I don't think so because I think you were gone the next weekend. That's and right. I was just on here like, does anyone know where Yoshi is? And then I was like, oh, I think someone in the comments was like, remember he was going to Spain. I was like, oh yeah, I pay attention to this show. Yeah. Last week was a good live. I told some great road stories I should upload, but I just...
Yeah. No, it just made me realize. I was like, oh, yeah, I don't think we talked about it. So,
no, it was great, though.
It was really good. Yeah. Yeah, we did a Hot Breath Live at Freedom Brewery in Cummings, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Fun show put on by
JB King and Ryan Skrilla.
King, and we took over the open mic and we got through every single comedian, and they did, I think, what did we do, a minute, 2 minutes?
I think it started with two, and then we were like, we got to rapid fire this thing.
Yeah, and then we did 1 minute and gave people notes, got tons of feedback from it, man. There were a bunch of people that were like, yo, thank you for that.
People really liked it.
They really, really liked it, yeah.
And the non-comedians enjoyed it too, like just the fans that were there, they were all about it too.
Yeah, super fun show. Yeah, and we're going to do it again at the end of this last Wednesday of this month as well.
Yep, and then March Joe 27th.
Are co-headlining the show in April, April 13th, at the Freedom Brewery if you are in the city.
Yeah,
that's going to be exciting. Coming out too, but...
That's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was cool to see... it in a live setting, because you know I was scared. I didn't.
Yeah, I could tell.
It was the 11th hour, and I was like, "Yo, man, I don't know. Do they know that this is?" I think I called you like 2 hours before. Do the comics know that we're doing this? And does the venue know the thing that you planned months ahead of time? Do they know? And everyone was super jazzed, and I met like a bunch of hot brethren who I talked to beforehand who were super excited about it. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. And I think I think the thing that they liked about it obviously was just the fact that they know that we do this show and just the experience levels, but also they hadn't heard anyone really give them feedback on their material.
Right.
Like just in a kind of in a safe setting, you know what I mean?
Right.
Outside of just the feedback of not getting laughs. Like sometimes you just don't know what didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very much like, this is why that didn't work. And yeah, I mean, we call it a nice Kill Tony, and I think people really appreciated that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was like a Kill Tony that was positive and uplifting and helpful. Yeah.
Much more uplifting. Yeah.
Yeah, that was very rewarding. Yeah, yeah. And I went... I did that clean comedy workshop on Sunday that went really well. So I'm going to do another one this Sunday on Zoom. You know me, I don't want to leave home. I got to water the roses. I don't want to go out. You know me. Dude, when I did the one in person, I was just like parking and walking. You know, it was all these things I had to do. But Zoom, I was in the wheelhouse, had the presentation. But it went really well and got great feedback. So I'm going to do another one on this Sunday afternoon. And like, I mean, the wait list was over 30 people. So, I mean, as many people that want to do it, learn clean comedy, I'm happy to do it and share the wisdom. So
I love that
it in the live chat for people watching live.
Being present. You're like, do I got to be there?
Yeah. Can you Zoom me in?
So you said I got to breathe natural air. Not the air in my own house?
You mean not the air from my blooming hydrangeas? You mean, ooh, we got some quince blooming, some roses, or get some new growth. I planted about 8 roses this weekend. We got about 15 more on the way. So it's going to be a good season. I was out there watering them before this. I got to get out there and turn my compost. Lord, what am I doing here? No. All those are true, except I'm grateful to be here. I am. I love doing this. Oh, but then I went and did Hot Brother and Joe Pettis' show on Saturday night, and it was like there was a comedian from Denver, Toronto, China. It was quite a dope lineup from comics from all over, but it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, what show was that?
It was his at the ASW Distillery.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
In front of the barrels.
Yeah.
So, you know, he puts on great shows. So it was a great turnout. It was a lot of fun. It's good to be working out this new stuff. It's feeling good. We're feeling back in a little bit of a rhythm here. We're leaving the house again.
Yeah, you know, we're getting out. Yeah.
We're getting out. We're getting
we're breathing that H2, that O2 oxygen and nitrogen. We're just getting out there.
We're getting out there.
That's water. That's great.
We got a question here from Zaynova. I know jokes have to be worked out. Speaking of working out jokes, I'm excited about a few. I'm excited about my cereal. I feel like I could do a special just about cereal. I feel like I could just build it out and do like a call it cereal killer. Oh, and this was the same show that a lady came up to me afterwards and said I'm the whitest person she's ever seen. So.
Yeah, that tracks for serial killer for sure.
Yeah, those two things go. I think that's probably why it triggered the memory. I was like, serial killer. Oh.
Yeah.
She said I'm the whitest person I've ever seen. Because I was talking about, I don't know what to do with this bit, but when I, you know, I did several jobs working with Mexicans, like landscaping and tree removal and washing dishes. And when I did tree removal, one of the Mexicans would call me Caramelo.
Yeah.
And I thought it was because of my skin, but it was the name of his donkey.
Yeah, you told me about that. I heard that.
So I told my wife that and she thought it was hilarious. She's like, you have to try that. So I do it on stage and like that gets a laugh and I have no idea what to do with it. And
I think gotta embrace it. I think, but like, go into why. Like, the why of why you are the donkey. Like,
because people, I think the lady said the race, the white thing, because, and then I reference, like, but I look like the supervisor or whatever. Or, like, they're like, yeah, you work with Mexicans. Yeah, you worked on them or whatever. And then that got a laugh.
Yes.
So maybe it is.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, I was like bottom of the totem pole at all these jobs. Like, I was literally like just even the hired help to carry stuff.
Even the reference to like, yeah, I'm white, but I wasn't that white. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't top of the totem pole white. I was starter pack white. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're like the beginning. You know what I'm saying?
It's like. I know you're probably assuming I was the supervisor, but I was actually being supervised. Like, this was my boss. This was my boss saying this. This guy paid me.
Yeah.
I was his donkey.
Yeah.
Because that is the contrast, I guess. People assume the white guy was like the manager, but I was honestly like at every job, I was the grunt basically, which was funny. Yes. Me working for Mexicans is a funny fish out of water scenario.
Yeah. And then I think you can go into examples of like how you got the job. Like how you beat out another Mexican to get the job. No. I work hard. You know what I mean? I'm call me, what is it, La Tortatilla? Or is
it, La Tortatilla?
What's the turtle?
Oh, Caramelo.
Caramelo. Yeah. Caramelo. No. I'm Caramelo. I'm
Caramelo.
I will work my ass off. You know what I'm saying?
Oh.
Like a donkey ass. Yeah. There's a lot.
It could also be instead of saying all the jobs, sometimes it helps a bit just to combine it all into like one thing. So it could just be when I was a dishwasher, and it could be I got the job instead of another Mexican because I had a college degree. I mean, I was literally a college graduate washing dishes, you know, like taking this fluff from Mexicans. Yeah. Cooking Italian food, you know.
Yeah,
so
I actually think that's funny that they looked at your college degree. They're like, yeah, dishwasher.
Yeah.
Or
liberal
like,
arts degree. Yeah.
Yeah. Liberal arts. You'd be great at the fryer. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just funny.
Oh, yeah. James Ledeau in the comments said large and not in charge. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So there's stuff to play with there.
Yeah. I think there's legs there of just being bottom of the totem pole.
Yeah. It's like the more, I mean, I just have to be the butt of the joke.
Yes.
Like,
yeah. You mean like the donkey of the joke?
Yeah. The ass of the joke. Yeah, basically. Because it's one of those things. It's kind of like my melatonin joke where I just say what it is. Like my wife and I popping a melly at 9 p.m. is like our version of a party. I just said it one day because it was true. And I was like, it gets a laugh. Interesting. So that Caramelo thing is another thing of like, I mean, I'm literally just stating a fact and it gets a laugh. So I'm looking to start finding more of those moments of, I think most of my career, I've just clevered my way into, you know, laughter of, I know how to manipulate joke structure to make something funny. But now since Dry Bar, it's like, what do I do now? It's kind of like a clean slate. So I'm trying to tap into those more personal experiences of like, this is the truth of what happened. And then I can start to build the comedy around it, I guess.
For sure. Yeah.
No, but you just filmed a special. So, you know,
it's
I mean, there's no pressure. I mean, it was. People will say that with, I think I was talking before the show this weekend about, who was it who just did a Don't Tell? We were, he's high energy. He opens for Roy Scovel. Can't believe I'm forgetting his name. He has a mustache. He's super high energy. It's not Mandel.
Shonik?
Yes, Shonik. I can't believe I blanked on his name. I'm so sorry. But he's very funny, but he just did a Don't Tell, and we were talking about that and comparing it to... Yeah. Dry Bar, and another comic was like, oh, so I guess you guys can't do that material anymore. And we're like, huh? Yeah, no, we're doing it.
Yeah, we're doing it.
What are we? We're doing it. Yeah. I mean, I'm writing new stuff, and I'm in a better rhythm than I have been in months creating new stuff. But yeah, it's no, you know, if someone books me to do an hour, they're going to get that Dry Bar. They're getting good. I mean, it's the goods, you know, if it hits, it hits.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. But I think that's what you asked about. Wait, what did
That was it. I mean, we delved into like a lot of different things. But I asked about the show that we did. And then we just went from there. Just different stuff.
We're doing the Clean Comedy Festival in April 3rd too here in Georgia.
Nice. Yeah, I'm excited about that.
I am too, man. I think it could be something. It could be something. I'm all in on clean comedy now. I want to tap in. I want to figure out how to really carve my name in that market. You know, I'm excited. You know, the venue reached out today and said, hey, there's zero tickets sold. So, you know, it's, I think I'm on my way. I think I'm on the right track.
Only up from here.
But I mean, it's 3 weeks away. So, I mean, there's plenty of time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm trying to plant a flag in the clean comedy and market, see what we can make happen.
Yeah. No, I think that's, first of all, I actually think you already have a flag in it. I think it's just a matter of just exposure, of getting more people to sort of understand that this is a different type of comedy. But I think the other piece about it is, it's also kind of nice to just hear clean comedy and not realize that it's clean.
Yeah. I think some people think clean comedy and then think corny.
Yeah.
Or like hacky.
Mm-hmm.
So it needs a rebrand.
Sure. Yeah, it needs a PR team to rebrand it. Because I think a lot of people sometimes, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I think there's a, because there's like a shift towards very dark, a little bit of dirty comedy that you'd kind of see like on, for example, Kill Tony, which is
right.
Like, I don't think a clean comedian could kill on Kill Tony. I don't believe so, because that crowd is into that kind of like material. But I think at the same time, there's definitely an audience that just prefers comedy that doesn't involve anything like dirty. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's just a lot of people that are like, would appreciate that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I think Jeff Foxworthy was just like, oh, I want to do comedy where like my kids, my parents and my grandparents could be there.
Just like, that's what I say too. Yeah.
It's like, that's a good solid element where you don't have to be edgy or talk about, you know, culture wars or everything negative that's like out there. You could just talk about cereal and be funny.
Amen. We're doing it, baby. I'm excited. It's been growing. I've got like 3 minutes on grape nuts. It's Costco. Getting.
Yeah.
Say what? Like, Costco?
I have a whole bit on Costco. Like.
Yeah. It's great.
These are pretty clean. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's another bit that didn't work in Barcelona because they don't have a Costco.
Because Costco? Like, yeah. Yeah, that's the reason it didn't work. Yeah, that's why it didn't. No tenemos Costco, eh? I don't know Spain Spanish. I think it's a little fancier in España.
But they'd understand you.
They would understand. Yeah, most of it. Yeah. Oh, I think that's where my ADD went, because Zaynova had asked a question about, how do you guys feel about comics that just talk without any real jokes, no cadence or rhythm at all? Because he said, I know jokes have to be worked out, but we got to have jokes. Necesitas chistas. So, but working stuff out. But I think a lot of times, I think especially younger comics will use the excuse of they hear Bill Burr or Burt Kreischer or someone doing arenas and theaters. And they hear them saying, oh, I just write on stage. I just write on stage. And then as a younger comic, they're like, oh, well, I'm clearly at that level. So I just write on stage and I'll just go up there and talk and not really have any direction or any punchlines. Or it's a whole different game. You got to learn the rules before you break them.
Yeah.
And it requires jokes.
Yeah, you just gotta, like Chappelle thinks in jokes now. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
These comics think in joke.
Exactly. Like they
talk in joke format. But that took years to do that. You know what I mean? Even Chappelle doesn't necessarily have like a set list, but he's talking through the joke. Like when he's working out material, like even mentioned it on some of the, like one of his exercises that he just writes a punchline and then writes a story that leads up to that punchline. Mm-hmm. And, but that kind of practice takes years to like master, to like get good at just that format. So yeah, it's not a, that's the thing. Comedians, we make it look easy. We make it look so easy to just like do those.
Doing Costco bits, you know, killing around the world. But that is, I mean, that is the old, that is the biggest like foolery in the book, is a comic looking at a pro and thinking, oh, they're just talking, that's all I have to do. But yeah, it's years of, it's honestly learning the rules before you break them. So I always recommend starting with one-liners just to understand joke structure, and it really starts to rewire your brain to think in joke and think in, oh, where's the misdirect? Oh, how can I redirect this? What's the setup? What's the punchline? Just learning the fundamentals, and then you can make it your own.
Yeah.
But yeah, early on especially, it's, yeah, there's jokes. Write jokes and do them on stage and rework them. But just going up there and talking, yeah, I mean, it's whatever you want to do with your time, but
yeah, I'm okay with people talking faster if they're experienced. Like,
I was thinking open micers. I was thinking younger comics.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Ali Sadiq comes off like he's just talking.
Oh.
Very conversational.
Of course.
But that's years of just like, even when he was doing the interview, he was like, man, I'm not even thinking about jokes. He's just thinking about being funny. So to him, like, it's just about the funny. So he's not even thinking jokes, joke structures, but everything he writes and everything he's delivered from specials, those are jokes inside of stories that he's weaved so well in there that it's still joke writing in a different format.
Yeah, exactly. And James asked if clean comedy is harder to write or does it depend on your point of view? I think it's just a different way to write. I don't think it's, people say, but I'm coming from that I've always done clean, and that's just where my natural sense of humor went. But I don't know. I mean, you're not completely clean. Do you?
No.
And that's not a dig, but I'm just saying, it's hard for me to tell from my point of view. Do you find writing clean harder?
I like the challenge of writing clean. I would say I don't naturally write clean, but that's just because I think I like a little bit of shock value and I like a little bit of like surprise in my jokes, but not shock value in the sense of like, oh, got to get it dirty. Just more like, I like when I'm writing and I'm writing like joke structure, I try not to think whether it's clean or not. I just write something that makes me laugh. And I laugh at clean and I laugh at dirty. So I never really like think about, is this a clean joke, until I'm putting my set list together and I'm like, all right, this is clean, this is pretty dirty. It just depends like on the topics. But I would say, yeah, I'm probably like 85, 90%. Close to 85% clean. But can I go dirty? It just kind of depends on the crowd. Like if a crowd is like thinking like dirty stuff, I will lean in and I'm okay with it. But I'm not like dirty where I'm like cursing a lot. It's just like I'll drop a couple of, you know, curse words just to like amplify and bring the crowd along with me. But
just
I'm not
crutch. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's the word he meant to say there, everyone. Amplify.
Yeah, but like if a crowd is into it, I'll dig in.
Crowds are. I mean crowds, like there's crowds that love dirty comedy, and yeah, it's all subjective, but I just was trying to think if it's harder to write. I think it's just maybe not the default for a lot of people.
I don't it's not the default for me to write clean. Right. I would say my default is to just write on the topic. I don't assess whether it's clean or not until much later, where I think, and I don't know if this is true for you, but when you're writing like at all times clean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's not, I don't, it's not that I avoid writing dirty. Like, if I think of something dirty, I still go with it and keep working on it. So if I have a dirty thought, I'm not like, oh, and then I pray and cry and burn the notebook like it was possessed by Satan. You know, I don't do any of that. So I don't stifle my creativity thinking, oh, this has to be clean or I can't do it. It's just, I just put in the work to find the clean angle on it, which anyone can do by taking my clean comedy workshop this Sunday on Zoom from 1 to 3 p.m. Save your seat, limited to 10. There's already 3 sold. So y'all get on that. And that is a perfect place to land this plane. We're going to get out of here. We do this every single Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you're interested in maybe helping us produce the podcast and make a little cash, reach out to us on social media at Hot Breath Pod. But we out here.
We are out here. Yeah, what do you got coming up? What do you got coming up in the next couple weeks?
I was trying to time it with the theme song, but I guess I'll have to play it again. I was like, we'll get out of here on the theme song, and then like, well, hold on a second.
Hold on a second. I was just wondering if you got stuff coming up, so let the people know.
Yeah, I'm hosting a show here in downtown Tucker.
Yeah.
At Blue Tarp High Card Brewing on Saturday. I'm doing a show at the Punchline next Wednesday. We're doing the Hot Breath Live on March 27th in Cumming, Georgia. Speaking of clean comedy and Cumming, Georgia. Okay. See, guys, I can be dirty. See, I'm cool, too. And really, the big thing is April 3rd, that Clean Comedy Festival.
Yeah.
We're doing, you're a part of it at Mad Life Stages and Studios. I'm excited.
Boom. All right, dope, dude.
What about you?
I got Friday doing Schoolhouse Brewing in Marietta, Georgia. Next week, also doing.
You asked and you didn't even know.
No. The
he asked and he didn't even know the answer to his own question. Derail. No, and then
we're doing the end of the month, our show, the Hot Breath Live, and then April 3rd. I've got that show, and then I've got the Punchline April 6th for the World Series of Comedy. And then me and Joel are doing a co-headlining set in Cummings, Georgia, April 13th.
April 13th. Oh, and I will be in Dixon, Tennessee on Saturday, April 6th as well.
Nice.
Doing a show up there. So, yeah, we're out here working. Feel free to book us. Hit us up on social media if you want to work together.
We working, baby. Yep.
We'll see y'all next Tuesday. We love you. Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.